You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I am your host, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and we have a jam-packed midweek episode to get to today because we are doing another mailbag. I had a lot of fun doing this about a week and a half ago. I had a lot of fun answering your questions and interacting with you guys on Twitter because I just think that's really fun, and it's fun to not have such, like me and Adam plan the topics, right? So it's fun to have some rigid off-the-cuff stuff, and I always read the questions beforehand, but I don't actually, like, prep that much. I just kind of think of what I will try to say, and my answers just kind of float off into space, and I find them along the way. So I always have a lot of fun with these, so let's just get right to it, I guess. I just asked on Twitter if anyone had any questions they would like answered for the mailbag, and I got more responses than the first time, so I really appreciate when you guys reply. It makes these episodes more fun and entertaining for everybody. So the first question is from Chris Milton, at Chris Milton underscore IND, says, would the Pacers be better off to have Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner in the starting lineup? This has been a very common question recently, and I think this one is going to be something that the Pacers have to deal with not only this season, but for many seasons in the future, is do they want to start them alongside each other? Does it make more sense to get another four to start next to one of them? And like I wrote about last week, you know, one of the best problems to have is you have two really good players at the same position, but obviously given that their ages and their somewhat complementary skill sets, you'd kind of like them to be playing alongside each other, right? Like you have a rim protector and your three-point shooting kind of stretch big in Turner, and you have your, you know, rim rolling and diving Sabonis who can grab the boards. But it's funny because you'd have like Turner be the center on defense and Sabonis on offense, so that kind of makes it match, but it might just work. So I think that, you know, in short spurts it works really well together, but I'm not sure in extended minutes how well it would work just because other teams have smaller guys at the four, and there may be some advantage to zagging while everyone else is zigging and having two bigs out there just because they're so talented. And, you know, Sabonis moves the ball really well. He always makes the right decision the second he catches it. And, you know, Turner's always good at getting to his spot for spotting up and scoring. So I think it could work. I'm just not sure. We haven't seen enough extended minutes to say for sure, but I don't think it can be any worse than what's going on now. So I think they should try to run it more as the season goes along just to see what they can get from it and see if they do have something there for the future, because then maybe they won't use some money on a four or anything like that. So good question, and I think we're going to have to talk about that one quite a bit more as this season and other seasons go along. Me and Adam will be asking ourselves that question about. So thanks, Chris. Good question. The second one comes from friend of the pod, Jordan Brandenburg, at JBGuitar2196. This is his second time, so welcome back, Jordan. He says, what are your thoughts on the impact of Glenn Robinson's return, i.e. who should start at the three? And then he also says, should Nate try a small ball lineup with GR3 and Thad at the 4 and 5? Will it cut into minutes for Joe Young, or who will GR3's return cut into the minutes for the most? So a lot to take in for this question, but I like the layers to it. It makes it more fun to answer. GR3's return is going to be interesting because I think he's going to be a little bit worse on offense than he was in past years because he hurt his ankle and he was kind of reliant on athleticism. I mean, he did win the dunk contest, but, you know, he's a really good cutter and he's a really good spot-up shooter. Those were two of his best skills last year, and I think those are two things he can still do really well. So I don't think he'll slow the offense down as much in those ways, but I think, you know, when he has to put the ball on the floor or has to try to beat a man in any, you know, screen or isolation situations, he'll be less effective. So I think compared to Bojan especially, he'll actually hurt the offense a tiny bit. But where he is going to be huge is that his lateral quickness on defense is a massive upgrade over most wings on the Pacers. And I think he'll really help the defense. And I think he'll help the defense more than he'll hurt the offense. So I think he'll be a net positive, especially just adding a ninth guy to the rotation who's competent and useful and has such a clear defined set of skills that are useful to an offense. So I think he'll fit really well next to Oladipo. That'll be the two best wing defenders, and Oladipo can create shots for Robinson. So I like that fit quite a bit. And I expect them to play a lot together, but I don't know if I'd start GR3. I know that question's gonna come up at some point in the future. Should Nate try a small ball lineup with GR3 and Thad? Yes, especially with Turner out. I would like to see more Thad at center. I like Allen. He's been playing really well compared to my expectations, at least. But the less he has to play, the more effective the Pacers will be. So if that means that you see a little Thad at 5 and GR3 at the 4, go right ahead. And that means you can experiment with like Lance and Vic, or, you know, Bojan and Vic, with those two guys would just be a crazy octane offense. So I think that would be a good idea. Just that's like the Sabonis Turner thing, where it would probably work better in short spurts than over an extended period of time when the other team can adapt and get subs in. Who will I think GR3's minutes will cut the most into? You know, Joe Young is probably the answer, like you said in the question, because Joe Young's been benefiting a lot from that injury the most, because they move Lance up to the three a little bit on the reserves, and they go Joe Young, Corey, and Lance when Joe Young gets his first stint, and his second one in the third quarter is just kind of Nate riding the hot hand and being matchup dependent. So probably Joe Young, and then they'll just slide Corey down a spot and Lance on that second unit. But, you know, maybe they will set out Corey if they want to keep giving Joe Young some looks. He's proven that he has a spot in the or at least could have a spot in the rotation. And if there's an injury, he can step right in. So, you know, it's a bummer for Joe Young that that's probably who it'll be. But, yeah, that's why I think it will be. Maybe a few sporadic minutes will be taken from Lance or Corey, but it'll probably be all of Joe Young's minutes. Maybe a few Leafs too, but I don't know how small Nate's going to want to go with Turner out. We'll have to see. That's going to be something to monitor too, but we haven't seen enough of the team without him to know what Nate's plan is. But good questions there, a lot to pack in. Matt Brown, at Matt Brown 347, asks, if Oladipo finishes the season at the same level he has been so far, what would be a fair trade offer for him? You know, they're obviously not going to trade him. This is just a fun thought exercise, but 3 years of what has been a top 15 player, assuming he keeps this up for the whole season, only making $21 million is worth a very, 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 very good draft pick, or, you know, another star and a good pick. You know, pretty high trade value for Oladipo, higher than Paul George's was, that's for damn sure, last summer, so that's pretty fascinating. I can't really think of a litmus for a player like with that much time left on his contract getting traded who was that good the prior season. That hasn't happened a ton in recent time. Jimmy Butler had 2 years, and he, you know, is probably as good as he's probably been better than Oladipo this year, but Kyrie had 2 years, you know. Like, most of these guys don't have this much time left on their contract when they get traded, so it's kind of hard to see. Goran Dragic, I think, had 3 years when he got traded, and he got 2 first-round picks out of him. So, you know, his value would be really high, but it's impossible to speculate, and they won't trade him. But that is a fun thought exercise on how high his trade value is, especially considering they got him in a trade. So, good question, Matt Brown, but I don't have a good enough answer besides a top 5 pick or another star and a top 10 pick or something like that. But good question, fun thought exercise. Next question from someone you guys might know, Adam Friedman, the other co-host of the show who's not on today. He's doing school. He's back. His Christmas break is over. Says, would you rather have Darren Collison or Corey Joseph for the next 2 seasons, assuming the Pacers have to pick one this offseason? I'll assume by 2 seasons he means next season and the rest of this year. I think I'd rather go with Corey, just depending on who, but it kind of depends on who they pick up in free agency, because if they pick up a 3-and-D guy who's really good at that 3-and-D stuff at the small forward position, I'd kind of rather have Collison, because Collison's a little bit better of a creator and scorer, and if you have a 3-and-D guy who can't create, you'd be too reliant on Vic almost. But if you get a 3-and-D guy who can create a little bit, kind of like Bojan does now, then maybe Corey makes more sense for some defensive purposes and versatility. And they've both shown that they can play alongside each other too, and they can both play alongside a lot of other guys. So it's not really an issue of fit so much. It's more of just complementary skills and things like that. So, man, I don't know. I really like Corey Joseph and the way he plays. So I guess if I had to pick one, I'd pick Corey Joseph. But that kind of question does depend on what happens in free agency, which is why it's such a bummer that the decision date for both of those guys and their contracts for next year is actually before free agency. So that is definitely something to monitor. The next question is from David Locke, the founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. He asks, Tony, what is your favorite way to play daily fantasy sports? Okay, he didn't actually ask that, but that's my corny segue into this ad for Draft, because Draft is our favorite fantasy site to play daily fantasy sports, because you have 80% better chance of winning on Draft. Draft is my favorite place to play. It's Adam's favorite place to play. And on Draft Wednesday, you can play with us. A lot of people are coming to Draft. More than 1 million people have already downloaded it and started playing, and you can play one right now. I'll do one while I'm talking. You can be done in under 5 minutes. You can get paid the next day. Drafts fill every second, so you can join whenever you want. And the best part is that it's a snake draft, right? So the experts can't just crunch their Excel sheets and draft all the players they want and, you know, make sure they at least win some money and screw you out of yours. They can't predict what you're going to do, so it's easier to win money. And all new players can get a free entry into one of these drafts. All you have to do is when you make your first deposit, enter the promo code LOPACERS. That is LOPACERS, like the team name. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you're going to have fun and come back that they're even offering Locked On Pacers listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com, insert that code LOPACERS at checkout, and you'll win a free entry into a draft plus up to a $100 bonus. Thanks for listening to this ad, and now let's get back to actual real questions. I had to throw in that nice little David joke. Next question is from at LChivo_5. His name is Tom Bellicraft on Twitter, but I know his real name is Sam Dabbs because I know him from college. Sam Dabkowski says, when will you go on strike until you get verified? I will probably never get verified on Twitter because I don't think I am worth verification to them. I don't really know how it works. They kind of just cut off the whole verification system because I think a lot of people who didn't deserve it got verified. So I don't think I'll ever actually get it now that they're going to be A, more strict, and B, I'm just like not probably what they are using the verification service for, but I would like to be verified. That would be really cool to have the check mark. But the next question, I think the next two questions actually, yes, are from at @ColtsFanRyan, one of the other friends of the pod. A lot of responses from Ryan, and we really appreciate those. Whose name is currently McDaniel Season on Twitter. He's probably very hype about that head coaching signing, as most Colts fans are. His first question is, and then by the way, if you do ask more than one question, I will answer both, so don't be afraid. He says, one reasonable free agent you think could help this team the most, and one reasonable trade idea you think could help the Pacers at the trade deadline. As me and Adam have preached before, we really like the idea of picking up Avery Bradley if it's not too expensive because of his complementary fit on this team. They need a guy like him who can guard on ball really well. I know there's been a lot of talk about his off-ball D not being so good, and that's fine. Those are fair criticisms with him. They've kind of slipped this year, especially on a Detroit team that doesn't really have the talent around him to get stops when he falls apart. But his on-ball D is excellent, and he can shoot pretty well. The only trouble is sometimes I think he thinks he's a little better than he is on offense, but when you're next to Oladipo, you don't get as many chances. So I think he'd fit in really well on the team, and he'd be a guy I would like to go after. Really any sort of 3-and-D guy who becomes available. I'm not sure who will be. I haven't really looked it up too much besides Avery Bradley. Like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will be available, I know. So the Heat have a million of those guys. I'm sure one of them will be a free agent. I can't even think of any guys on the top of my head. But anyone who fits that mold is who I'd want to go for in free agency. Trade-wise right now, I know me and you go back and forth a lot on Twitter, Ryan. You know, we like Elfrid Payton from the Magic. But I don't know what I'd give up for him just because with restricted free agency coming up, he's going to get expensive. So if for the right price, I'll take Elfrid Payton. I like that he could fit on this team as a slasher and a passer and a defender. And he's shooting pretty well from three this year, even though I don't believe that's a real trend. But the trade market this year is tough for the Pacers because it's hard to send out either A, matching salary, or B, the right price. And I don't know what level they're going for, if they're trying to move up or down or stay lateral and just get some injury assurance for Miles. So a lot of options. My number one guy on the trade market, I don't know. That's a really hard question. It's hard to see a trade the Pacers make that upgrades their team at not a crazy cost. Maybe anyone they could just get for like their second rounder. They'd have to do the reverse protections of the Nets pick to send out their second rounder. But literally anyone they could get for that second rounder on the wing could be nice. Like Marco Bellinelli would be someone nice just because he's a pretty good shooter and can play offense well. He'd fit really well next to Corey Joseph on the second unit. If they could get Courtney Lee from the Knicks, I don't know what they would give up to do that, but I would be very much in favor of Courtney Lee's shooting and defense. Someone in that mold, you know, I talk about 3-and-D guys so much because I think they're so important. So if they could pull that off, those would be my ideal trades. And your second question was, what type of contract would you give Corey Joseph this offseason? Do you think he has the ability to be the long-term starter for the Pacers next to Oladipo? I don't know, because Corey Joseph has that player option at about $8 million, and I don't know how much more than $8 million he's worth. He could be worth up to $10 million. He's a pretty good point guard. So I bet he opts out, and maybe like 4 for 45 or 4 for 48 or something. I don't know. They'll have his bird rights, so they can sign him to whatever contract they want. So that'll be tough to see, but yeah, I don't know how much more than like $10 million a year with raises, I would go, just because you could get a lot of other point guard options, and maybe Vic plays a little point guard next year too, which is not the craziest option ever. And there's a second part to that question. Lastly, if you don't think he can be a long-term starter, what is the best way to upgrade the point guard position? Draft, free agency, trade. Depends what draft pick they get. You've heard a million times, everyone has. I'm not the biggest Kemba guy, and I would like Mike Conley, but it'd be a scary prospect trading for somebody that injury-prone with that big of a contract. So I think the best answer is going to be free agency next summer. I need to look through more who's going to be available next summer. It's time to start, you know, shifting to look at that kind of stuff. But there's got to be somebody that can help out some at point guard. I think that's probably the best option, because the draft pick's going to be in that, you know, that 14 to 20 range, where the Pacers, you know, are really good at hitting on that pick, but you know, it's not somewhere you get an immediate contributor. So that is the position to monitor going forward, though, with Collison and Joseph potentially being expiring. So good questions that I have terrible answers for, Ryan. I'm really sorry. It's you know, the trade season is I'm focusing on a lot of other teams and what they're going to do around the Pacers, because other teams seem more primed to make trades than this Pacers team does. So there's been less focus there. I know the Kemba talks have gained some traction in the Pacers Twitter, but I'm going to stay away from that. Alan Jenkins at AJenks24, another Hoosier alum, asks, have you noticed increased attendance and more buzz from the fan base now that they have Oladipo, a former IU player, on the team, or is interest surrounding the team about the same? A lot of you listeners know the answer to this question already. There is way more interest around the team with Oladipo on it for a variety of reasons, one being his IU fandom, and you can hear that when they call his name out during player introductions. The whole stadium just gets so hype, and there's a sense of community around the team that there hasn't been for a while, and the fact that they're just you know, exceeding expectations, drawing the alumni, getting the cheers, you can really tell that he's been embraced here. He does the "This is my city" celebration all the time. He loves it. The fans love him. You know, he's the guy, that all-star that the team has craved since the Paul George trade, which sounds hilarious because it was in, you know, a year ago, but everyone thought this team would be bad. So the fact that they already got what they wanted out of it has been huge, and his connection to the state is huge, and you know, there's been a lot more buzz, and now that the Colts sucked this year too, it's been huge for the Pacers and his popularity. Good question. Jack Christ, I'm hoping I say that right, it's J-H-A-Q on Twitter, at Jack Christ, spelled the same way as I just said, says, is Darren Collison a top 10 point guard right now? You know, if you asked me way before the season if he'd be top 10, I would have said hell no. If you ask me today if he's top 10, I'll say just regular no. But he's exceeded my expectations absolutely significantly, but I don't think he's a top 10 point guard thanks to his defense. He's been, you know, taking care of the ball, nice passing, good shooting all year, but still can't, I'm sorry, I keep trying to clear my throat and there's some pauses, but he keeps, you know, sometimes he just dribbles the air out of the ball, and his defense really annoys me, and I just think there's point guards are really saturated and talented position, you know, Curry, Westbrook, Chris Paul, like, you could name a bunch really quick that are very talented, and Collison's closer than I thought he would be. You know, I would have said probably before the season he's probably 20. I would say now he's in that 12 to 15 range. So, you know, good to see him be succeeding, and that's part of the reason the Pacers have exceeded expectations. But I still wouldn't say top 10, but I haven't contrived a list. See, this is one of those questions where I should have prepared an answer instead of just kind of glancing and thinking about it beforehand, because if I actually had a list of top 10 point guards, I could have given you a more definitive answer. But I would say no, but if I change my mind, I'll actually tweet you, Jack, because that is a good question. James from IP Basketball, another revered member of Pacers Twitter, says, where would you rank Depot this season overall, top 10, top 20, etc.? His advanced stats all suggest top 10 to 15, so I'll go top 10 to 15, which is just unbelievable. Who would have even thought he'd get close to that level this year? To already be there and to be doing it consistently is just crazy. The fact that the team is bottom five in net rating in the whole league when he doesn't play, and is top whatever 10 when he does play, just shows how much of an impact he has, and his stats speak for themselves, his improvement speaks for themselves. He's such a leader on the court now that, you know, I'm definitely 100% on board with, you know, I was one of those annoying people who was like, oh, he's going to be unsustainable all year, and you can all make fun of me for that because I was dumb. And now that he's put it up for half a year, you know, you got to have him in that conversation of top 20, top 15 player. And I would say top 15 is my number, but not much higher than that, just because there's so much star talent in the league these days. But he has done an incredible year to get up into that echelon of superstar talent. And I think that, no, I thought that was the last question, but it is not. And this last one actually does require me to look something up. So you're going to get a live reaction in a second. Morgan Webster, at Morgan J. Webster, says, please tell me you've seen the reported All-Star jerseys for this year. All-Star jerseys look terrible. Will this be the first All-Star jersey we have to see Vic in? Yuck. And I haven't seen them at all, so I'm going to Google leaked NBA All-Star jerseys and hope that I don't throw up because apparently they're really bad and I would hate that. Oh my goodness, those are older. Whew. I got the first picture that came up was when it was in New Orleans and it had the sleeved ones that were just awful. So thankfully it's not those. Sports Logos has them. Oh, these black ones, I saw these, yeah. I hope that that's not how it is with this, just because this is a Western Conference Lakers one. It's just black with Lakers and white on it. So I'd guess the East jerseys are white with the team logos in black on them. And if that's the case, yes, I agree that those are horrible. The sentiment I guess why it's there, like a nice contrast. But just throwing together a black jersey with a logo on it is bad. And Conrad Burry, the Jersey Masters tweet is embedded in this article. It says, guys, I have potentially terrible news. Let's hope everything sacred that this isn't a first look at the All-Star jersey template, but it appears to be a possibility. So that is scary. They do not look very good. That's a good question. My goodness, I do not like that at all. But yikes, that's sad. Now I'm not going to get an Oladipo All-Star jersey, that's for sure. But yes, good question, and it forced me to look something up. So thanks, Morgan, for bringing that to my attention. I actually did not know that those had been leaked. I got to Google that. But thank you guys for submitting your questions. They were all tweeted for you listeners to me at TEastNBA and the podcast at Locked On Pacers. So if you want to be a part of the next mailbag, I'll happily answer your questions. Just tweet at either of those accounts or at my co-host, FriedmanAdam5. At FriedmanAdam5, excuse me, his name is Adam Friedman. He'll gladly answer your questions too. We really enjoy doing these just because, it's not so rigid. We get to talk about what you guys want to hear, and it's just really fun for us to think in a different way than what, you know, it forces us to think about something we weren't already thinking about, which is an absolute blast. But yeah, follow all those accounts on Twitter too. We have a lot of Pacers news coming up. I just wrote something really cool about Lance Stephenson's confidence and his shooting in games, so be sure to check that out. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow. Well, Adam will be back tomorrow to preview Thursday's game against the Portland Trailblazers. Have a great day.